Hi there. Welcome to The Preventable, the podcast giving you a seat at the table with conversations about the intersection of alcohol, drugs, and mental health in everyday lives. Take a seat and join us.
Welcome to The Preventable. With me today is an illustrious guest. I feel like I say that every time, but it's really true. And who I have with me today is a jack of all trades. I don't think I've ever seen you stop moving for longer than 20 minutes, maybe.
That's true.
Yeah. So with me today is Jordan Hampton. Say hello.
Hello. It's nice to be here at the super, super official Preventable room.
Preventable, Preventable, Preventable,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a logo. We've got backdrops. We've got it all. So.
I mean, and as of today, we have cool mugs.
I'll be walking home with a mug.
Yeah, this will be your parting gift.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah, if you could sign it when I leave it.
Pretty soon people are going to be asking for your autograph. So
you want me to introduce myself?
Yeah, that's a nice segue. So why the heck are you here? I mean, as I said, you are literally, Jordan, your hand is in a lot of pots here in the state of Missouri, and most of it revolves around this idea of peer support. But I think a lot of people are like, what the heck does that really mean? And because honestly, I mean, this is kind of a new facet of the continuum of care with substance use disorders, or at least newly getting attention.
Yeah, I think, you know, on the specific mental health side of things, you had peers before these substance use treatment type of peers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That goes back a little bit further than what we're seeing now. And then since the beginning of Bill and Bob, you have the therapeutic value of one addict helping another, right?
Bill and Bob, for those who don't know, are the founders of AA.
Correct.
Yes.
So I think that, you know, we've always seen the concept working, right?
Of peer support of support networks.
Yeah, I think that's almost with anything, right? Like, whatever you're struggling with, you want to identify with someone that has struggled with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's many different support groups. And so I think that's kind of how this really came to fruition with the peers kind of working in substance use treatment, because you have an epidemic boom.
Yeah.
Okay, so. And everyone is kind of looking for, and we're all looking for answers.
Yeah, everyone's looking for solutions. How can we fix it? How can we prevent it from happening again? We're talking about the opioid epidemic that has since morphed into really just overdoses, right?
Yeah,
and fentanyl.
I mean, it's just a substance misuse epidemic, you know. But yeah, I think that, you know, as we started to see all of that. You know, and everyone's trying to get creative with their model, and then SAMHSA really coming out with, you know, Med First, housing, outpatient, this kind of outpatient detox model, due to just lacking residential beds and just being the most feasible model for the volume.
Because there were so many people, there weren't beds available. So how can we take it outside of like a traditional treatment center and really offer support in community?
Yeah. What's the most feasible way to try to treat this thing without, you know, 100,000 residential beds?
So what is the difference between a peer, which, I mean, you employ peers, you train peers, you were a peer, what is the difference between a peer and, let's say, a counselor?
Yeah, so the peer, you know, a person, so it's a person in long-term recovery, right? So let's just say, so for me, for instance,
let's use you as an example
and how I became a peer. So I came to Recovery House of St. Louis, recovery housing organization, came in, just kind of got my roots planted and was, you know, taking suggestions, all of the things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wanted to pursue recovery, and that's what I did. I just put my head down and pursued it, and I listened, soaked it up. Now, that got to a point, right, where my mentors kind of started to tap me on the shoulder and say, hey, is service something that you would like to, you know, like, you want to turn this into a career? You know,
what did you want to be? What did little Jordan want to be when he grew up?
That's funny you say that. I little Jordan wanted to be an NBA.
And then
little Jordan then wanted to be in the NFL. So we were.
I'm sensing a theme.
Yeah. So we were really staying true to. I was told that my NBA dreams were probably not going to come to fruition, so I switched to
an equally attainable yeah. goal of joining the NFL. Okay,
yes.
So
I switched to a different sport, but I think that when I started this process, like, I didn't know what I wanted to. I didn't know what I wanted to be.
Of course.
I had no idea.
How would you even know that something like this exists? Like, they don't teach me, like, I mean, I didn't know, like, you could be an executive director of a nonprofit. That was not something we had a career day.
Yeah.
Or hosting a podcast. Like, that didn't even exist when I was a kid, okay? So how do you even know that this is what you want to be when you grow up?
I mean, I'm working, yeah, like, as far as, like, you know, as a kid, yeah, I wouldn't have no clue that this is where I'd be sitting.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, you know, personally, that's what just kind of reiterates, like, my faith and things happening for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the difficulty is when you're in it, right?
Oh, yeah. So speaking of in it, so you're at Recovery House, you're putting a lot of work into your recovery.
Mm-hmm.
One of your mentors taps you on the shoulder and was like, hey, I think you'd be good for this.
Yeah, I think that you'd be good at this. And I was a dropout in college, a social work dropout.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was in hot pursuit to become one. And
so you wanted to be a helper anyway.
Yeah. I always, my stepdad owned, he still does, a company called Reliable Home Care. And it's here in the state of Missouri, and it's in-home nursing for individuals struggling with different disabilities.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of what turned me on to, I lived with three guys who had, you know, some physical disabilities and some other things. And we, I don't know, I think that just grew my heart for that place. And then when I go through sports and I go through my addiction, I think that I was going to come out. I thought, you know what, I may come out of the other side of this a coach, football coach.
Oh, all right.
So
okay.
I think
by the way, you kind of are.
So that's why I'm saying that. I think this is the type of coach I was supposed to be.
Huh. So you become a peer, and there's a credential, and it's becoming more, I would say, legitimized and recognized as a real field, and the state is trying to put resources into that. But you don't really, I mean, what is the difference between a peer and a counselor? Let's start there.
Okay. So a counselor is very much, I mean, focusing on your problem, that, you know what I mean, and trying to problem solve and shed perspective on, but it's not, I mean, it goes against the rules to be sharing your personal story.
Right.
So that's that's what I'm trying to say. That's the big difference. Now, the peer is you use your experience, strength, and hope as that is your greatest tool.
Your experience, your strength, and your hope. That's your greatest tool.
That's your assets.
Huh.
So, you know, So timeline-wise, they're tapping me on the shoulder, saying these peers are starting to come to be. Here's the credential. Here's what you do. And I'm starting to kind of, like, learn what that is. Like, you know, you just asked. I didn't know what.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people don't.
I had no clue. So once it was explained to me what, you know, a true peer was going to be, and, you know, I'm hearing terms like recovery coach thrown around. Mm-hmm. So I went in to take the training. It's a 40-hour training.
Right.
And I went in, took the training, came out, and was on fire.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good way to describe you. So you were on fire, so much so that you were, at some point in time, you were tapped to actually be a house manager for one of the recovery houses.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're the executive director of the whole damn thing.
Yeah.
How many houses do you have?
12.
So let's pretend that I don't know anything, right?
Yeah.
What is the difference between a recovery house and, like, a halfway house or, like, sober living? Like, is there a difference? Is it just a difference in terms?
I think you got to – yeah. I think there is a difference. I think when you think when you say halfway house, and I think when most folks think halfway house, they have in their mind of a reentry house, like, right? Like, probation, parole, very, very, very structured, kind of like policed.
Yes, right.
Right. So that's where I go, and I think that's where most people go when you say halfway house. Now, sober living or recovery supportive housing is, it's an interesting model, right? because that is, it's not, it, yes, it's structured, but it's loose enough to where you can, you have enough freedoms to be able to build a individualized quality of life.
Yeah, because many of your residents, some of them are pursuing becoming peers, but a lot of them are getting IT jobs or, you know, starting to think about entering the dating world, and some of them are dating, and like, what is that like? And it's, but then you always have this like grounding, right, with the guys at your house, whether that's a house meeting or like holiday event or whatever. So it's like there is that flexibility, but enough structure to provide a safe support. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's it. That's very true. I think the biggest part, the biggest difference between a, you know, when you hear halfway house and recovery supportive housing is the culture of it. When you think about the difference between a doctor's office and grandma's living room.
Right.
Right. So that's where we, you know, as recovery housing providers really try to just dial in on those little differences and what that creates and what that feels like, because you're trying to create the most conducive environment possible for a person struggling to recover in.
So I have two questions, and they're both kind of personal, but I don't mean them personally.
Yeah, it's okay.
Do you ever get tired of telling your story?
It's funny.
I feel like I would. Yeah, and especially if you're a peer and you're leading with that. Or I don't mean leading with that.
Glad you asked it, actually.
I mean, you're like an open book constantly. And for me, I'd be like, man, I just some days just want some anonymity here.
So it's funny that you say that, because no one ever asked that. But I feel that. That's why I pursued learning all these other trainings and supervisions.
I
wanted to refine my craft. I was, yes, here's my story. And it is powerful. I do know that. I mean,
yeah.
God took me through a lot, and I'm glad that I just complied.
Yeah,
so,
right.
You know, but that story is powerful. But there's, you gotta really, really refine your craft to be a great peer, right? So take that story and because it's not you just walking around telling your story.
Right, exactly.
I mean,
You're not just doing assemblies telling your story all the time. I mean, there's a time and place for that, but that's not what you do.
I can tell you, I've got about 10 roles that's not the story.
So I'm seeing some, like, synergy. We had one of our previous guests, his name is Clark Porter, and he is a person who was in the prison system for a very long time. And I said, what does success look like to you? Because now he helps formerly incarcerated people live healthy, productive lives. And he said that success looks like, for him, what success looks like is that his time in prison is just an asterisk. Like an asterisk, am I saying that right?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's just an asterisk on his story. Mm. That it's not the first chapter. It's not the beginning of the whole book. It's literally an asterisk at the end. And it propels everything he does, of course, but that his identity is so much more than that.
Yeah.
I don't know if that resonates at all to you, but when he said that, I was like, yes.
And he doesn't want to, you know, identify
right.
as that part, because that's, you know, that's what we're highlighting, right? Like my story, but I want to, and the recovery of it. But it's not, it's like, I'm here, and yes, like, thank God, but I want that story to be as effective as possible.
Right.
I'm not just trying to sling my story around to hear myself talk.
Yeah.
You know, like, I want the whatever tool it's going to take.
Right. And sometimes it could just be a cup of coffee, right? And just a conversation with somebody.
Absolutely. It might just be a cup of coffee, the just meeting, the presence, just
getting out of somebody's house, like literally just
diversionary support type
of
stuff. Absolutely. Yeah. It doesn't take much.
So, okay, next question that is not meant to be personal, but it might be. You know, I have a team of 60 people who I'm really invested in. Mm-hmm. And these are people who have journeys, right? And I'm invested in every part of their journey. Some of them have mental health struggles. Some of them are in long-term recovery. How do you, I mean, you obviously are invested in your team members, the men who run the houses. You're obviously invested in your residents. Like, how do you not get so invested that you get derailed if and when one of them struggles? How do you do it? Because I'll tell you, when one of my staff is struggling, I feel like I just want to pull the covers over my head for a while, you know? And if one of them has something that, you know, how does it not, like, bottom you out?
Right, because I talk about that a lot, where it's tough work, right? Because we go back and forth sometimes. I mean, it's a fight. And,
right. It is.
You're in the
it's
midst
a
of a war with your buddies, and that's how we feel sometimes. We're in those manager meetings.
I mean, do you just recognize that that's part of it?
Yes, and I think that objectivity, like, as I am a passionate person and I love people. That's what got me here.
Mm-hmm.
I had to learn how to be objective so I could be able to help on a large scale and consistently. And that was really, really hard to do, and it still is hard to do. But if I feel myself, you know, especially if I'm like really emotionally tied into a situation, then I tap out, because I realize that I'm not going to be able to clearly make the best decision for our organization probably at this time, because I'm so emotionally tied into this person. And we all just have an understanding that happens.
Yeah.
And so fortunately, I've got, you know, a good team.
I mean,
close
it's the
to
nature
me.
Of the disease, right? Like, that's part of it.
Yeah.
It's not part of everybody's story, but it's part of the disease. It's the part of the story of the disease in general.
It is. And so it's like you got a bunch of passionate people telling them to be objective.
Dude, I know.
you got to laugh about it, because it is difficult. It really is difficult. But I don't know. I think that was just one that I had to accept.
Yeah.
And then it was a lesson to not be too objective.
Yeah, right. So
right?
That you're not,
so,
like,
you learn that lesson, and then I came back through, and it's like, Jordan.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Humanize it.
Yep. Yeah. Because you don't want to be so removed that you're cold.
Right.
But you also can't be so emotionally invested that you're rocked to your core every single time something
happens.
It's
been happens. A balance. That's been a hard one to. That was a difficult one to learn. I think I wanted the path for someone else so badly that it wasn't even just like I'm. It was like such an investment that I didn't even realize that that's what I was doing sometimes. And it was objective parties to me and my mentors that would say, hey, Jordan, he's got to, you know, you have provided this, this, and this. You know, here's,
now
he's had this, this, and this resource. You know, you're.
So what does success look like for you? I'm going to ask the same question that I asked Clark. I mean, what does that look like? It could be for, you know, peers and your role in that. It could be, you know, for you as a person. Like, what does success look like
right now? So now I'm so blessed. I'm so happy with where I sit, and I feel that things are successful. The organization, me,
it's gangbusters, man.
I am happy now. I'm trying to be the best servant I can possibly be and create. I'm really focused on trying to create opportunities around me and getting folks ready to fill those opportunities when they do arise, because I've got to do a lot of really cool stuff, and, you know, with whether it's podcasts or interviews or speaking engagements, I've had, you know,
yeah,
it's
you've
been
had
it's,
cool opportunities.
I've had some cool stuff, and you know, I think, you know, as a part of a as a peer, right, still this is it's kind of my job now to, like, help more peers get into a position where mm-hmm. they can also have those opportunities, and we're going to be a way better organization for it. And
absolutely.
And from a, you know, just at like a, even a time management standpoint, right? Like,
there's only so much of you to go around.
Yeah.
Right?
So really honing in on those house managers and making sure they're ready for the opportunities that come to them. And then we grow as as one big unit. And me personally, I've got to, I have to stay close to God and listen to what he's, what
that's
he's telling me.
That's important for you.
It's important for me. And he's leading this ship, and I just, I've got to make sure I'm listening carefully.
Well, speaking of listening, so I would say this even if you weren't in the room, but I, you know this, that I've called on you on multiple times, with some people in my life who are struggling and who I feel could really benefit from a peer. And you are absolutely my go-to because I think that you are so relatable and so down to earth. The teenage girls love you, but, but I mean, you also relate very well to like a 30 something who just can't get his stuff together, you know? And I'm just so appreciative of everything that you do, both as a whole for the field, but also for me personally. And, I could listen to you talk all day. If you also could listen to Jordan talk all day, or if you just like listening to these conversations, please review, subscribe to the Preventable Podcast. Jordan, thank you.
Thank
so
you for
much.
Having me. This is fun.
Yeah.
I love these discussions. I feel like I get to just step out of it and like, let's just talk about what's
going
on for
about
a second.
It. No data points. Let's just have a conversation.
Yeah, it was refreshing. It was nice.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I appreciate you.
Thanks for joining us at The Preventable, brought to you ad-free by PreventEd. PreventEd works to reduce or prevent the harms of alcohol and other drug use through education, intervention, and advocacy. Please visit their website at PreventEd.org. Like what you heard? Rate, review, and subscribe to stay up to date with what we are serving on The Preventable.